Hello and welcome to the Could Have Been Champions Saturday soiree. Billy Baxter here. Good to have your company. Hello there, Greg Champion, well, working from my left.
Hello back to you. Right back to you. And hello to you and you and everyone out there.
Good to see you here. I'm sure we'll be talking Tamworth with you later on. And hello to you, Jeff Richardson.
Hello, Billy. Hello, Australia. Hello, Greg Champion. Yes, this is the Could Have Been Champions Saturday soiree. Great to be with you.
Also,
wherever the sun is in your sky.
Wherever it's shining. And, of course, not in the studio tonight, but down the line with us directly will be Ian James Cover. I think there might be a health issue with Ian. I'm not entirely sure, but we'll be finding out about that indirectly.
Indirectly?
Directly. Hello, Ian. I can hear you chuckling.
Yes, yes, it's me. I'm here, Billy.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Hello, Richo. Hello, Champy.
Well, you say you're good, but I'm led to believe you're not that good.
No, look, I'm just slightly unwell, and perhaps I can share with you why I am.
Yeah, go ahead and share.
Yeah, look, well, as you'd realise, it's coming to the end of the holiday season, and often appears in holiday resorts as a temporary fixture over the summer?
Oh, the foreshore carnival.
Thank you.
There you go. Oh, you haven't copped a crook, what are they called in South Australia, Greg? The hot dog on a stick?
You didn't get too dizzy on the Big Dipper.
Now, Richard, you've got 2 out of 2 so far. Oh. There is a carnival near where I live.
Working beautifully, Jeff.
Yes, you're on fire at the minute. So I've gone down to the carnival, and you just have a look, and you think, well, I'm not going to pay that much for 5 minutes on the ride. And anyway, I was in the company of younger members of the family, and they thought this might be a bit of fun.
Yeah, come on, Dad.
Yeah, come on. You know, I'm more inclined to just, if I'm going to park with some folding, it'll be to just stick the ping pong balls down the clown's cop.
Traditional values.
Yeah, it's so much less humiliating when you don't win anything than when you fire the gun or throw the dart and it doesn't hit anything.
Yeah, so anyway, there was one of the rides in there that was looking kind of forlorn because the carnival, the carny person who was in charge of that particular ride wasn't getting any custom. So I said, I think we'll go on this one. All right, we'll go on this one.
And you thought perhaps because it was less popular, it might be one of the less sort of frightening rides?
I thought it was just for the kiddies. And it consisted of a circular sort of affair upon which were placed half a dozen oversized teacups.
I wish you'd let me go. I would have got 3 out of 3. I knew this was going to be the cup and saucer merry-go-round.
Oh.
That's about your speed, isn't it?
Thank you. And I thought, I'll take the number 3, the blue one.
We were all
going to pile into one, and the bloke said, oh, look, there's 3 of you. Can have one each.
And you're looking at it this stage thinking, there's no way that's going to be able to go fast enough to put me in any discomfort whatsoever.
To bring up the day's takings.
Oh, yeah, thank you, Jimmy.
And you've invoked Jimmy Bartell's number, feeling quite safe in that regard.
Yeah, correct. So so I popped into the little blue number 3, and he presses the buzzer, and away it goes, and it goes slowly at first in a clockwise fashion. Now that's the large disc upon which we're seated is going clockwise.
Right.
But then you see the teacup on the saucer decides to go anti-clockwise.
Oh, yes, it does.
Oh, no.
And as you're going around, you think, oh, it's a bit of a laugh, but then...
So you've got a bit of epicicular motion happening.
With the emphasis on sick.
And on the second syllable.
Yeah.
So then you're halfway around going anti-clockwise in your cup, and you lean back, and it decides to stop and go clockwise.
Oh, there's the sting in the tail. That's what you pay your money for.
So you've lost count of how many rotations you've made on the big wheel, and you've got no idea how many you've done in the small cup. Oh, dear.
So, and you've lost track of all, you don't know what's up, down, north or south at this stage.
All right. So I've done the rounds, and finally he comes to a stop, and you the man takes the little cord off in front of you so he can get out.
Mm. Oh, and then you haven't got your sea legs anymore, have you?
No, the sea legs went from straight under me. I was the boy on the burning deck, so I could pull off. And the legs went, and then, meanwhile, a crowd of adults was assembled to watch this thing going around.
Which was what you wanted to do in the first place.
Yeah, I just wanted to watch. And you get someone there that's probably had a large day on the beach and then refreshed at the hotel over the road, and they're just giggling at you, and they're going, that ride's not for the old people, is it, eh?
Which is what you could have been doing if only you'd had a little bit more willpower.
So I wobbled out of there, and I haven't felt well.
Covey, you have walked into the sucker punch. You have been, what, persuaded by the children, the youngsters,
to
go on something which has no, which you have no right to go on or has
But no, it's looked deceptively benign. That's the other thing.
Well, they saw Ian coming, didn't they? They said, this fellow is pallid. We can make him more pallid. 1-300-800-222, 1-300-800-222. If you have experience, Andrew from Maryborough has just called in, gents, to say that the hot dog on a stick is a Pluto pup.
That's correct.
It's a Pluto pup in New South Wales and in Queensland, but I'm not so sure that that's strict usage south of the Murray.
It'll be bratwurst something.
Ian, you're the most cautious fellow I've ever known, and I've known you for 40-some-odd years.
I don't know what's come over
you. What's come over you either.
No. I also, Ian...
what a daredevil. He went on the cup and saucer ride.
I also had to take the youngsters into the park with the moon in front of it, the one down by the shore, the permanent one. But more of that later. However, even I, in impetuous and sometimes foolish,
risk taker.
Yeah, risk taker. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. Would not even ever consider some of the rides.
That gyrocopter you went on at Tamworth, it didn't spin clockwise and then anti-clockwise.
Greg wouldn't even stand in front of the wobbly mirrors in the Hall of Mirrors.
Could have been. Matt has joined us from Benalla. Hello, Matt.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine at the moment.
Experience in this regard?
Yes, I've been on, at the Benalla show, a ride called the Cha-Cha.
Yes.
That doesn't sound so sinister.
Oh, no. But, you know, I'm not as young as I used to be, my balance ain't that good neither, and I was feeling quite ill.
You would. Which is the Cha-Cha? What does it do? I reckon I've seen the Cha-Cha.
It's got three arms. It goes round in circles. And then on those three arms, there are another three arms.
Yes.
On each of the arms, and they've got a carriage in them. So they go around, like the teacup job.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
I reckon the Marquis de Sade must have been the carny running it.
Right. Yeah.
Because he looked at me when he had it at moderate speed and said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "No." So he sped it up.
That's kind of him.
Billy?
Yes, Ian?
The nurse is coming around, so I'm going to have to take some more tablets.
Yes, all right.
Can I leave you with the listeners on 1-300-800-222? And when the tablets kick in, I might be able to ring back and talk to you some more. And look, can we put out a call for someone?
Oh, did we lose our Benalla boy?
Yeah, we lost Matt. Sorry. Thanks, Matt.
Can you put out a call to someone on 1-300-800-222 to see if anyone's tried out the thing that which was also down there, which I didn't dare go near. And it's like a huge inflatable clear plastic ball.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a variation on the jumping castle.
Yeah. So you get inside it.
Yeah.
You go inside this thing.
Oh, like a soft drink ad.
Like the old-fashioned Coke ad that we all thought that was what our future was going to be like.
And so I saw they had four of these in an oversized wading pool, and blokes would get into them. They'd come straight over the road from the pub and get inside them, one each. And you try to stand up and they just fall over. It's the funniest thing to watch, but you never want to go in it. I'd love to hear someone who's been inside the ball.
Very good. We'll call on 1-300-800-222. Ian, grab the bucket and have a lie down.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Talk to you during magic moments, Ian.
Thank you. Right.
Thank you.
Right.
Bye.
See you, Cove.
John is in Melton. Hello, John. How are you this evening?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
Well, thanks. Thanks for phoning this morning.
Love your program.
Oh, thanks, John.
We took a scout group to Luna Park some years ago,
mm-hmm.
and after going on the Gravitron, which wasn't too bad, we went on the Spider Arm, didn't I? I got conned by one of the scouts to go on the Spider Arm, which is a six-arm or seven-arm thing that goes up in the air with these rotating buckets, like you gentleman explained.
Yep.
And you go around one way and you go around the other way.
Yep.
Oh, mate, I was sick in about 2 minutes. I wanted to get off.
Yeah.
When we got off, the scout said to me, oh, let's go and get another hot dog to eat. And I said, oh, are you joking? I'll be sick for half an hour.
And, John, this scout, did he earn his confidence trickster badge?
Oh, yes, he got the badge that night. He took the cake.
Can you describe the Gravitron?
The Gravitron is the one which spins around and the floor falls out.
It's centrifugal force, isn't it, John?
Centrifugal force holds you against the wall, so you got no floor, but that was all right. And one of the scouts there went upside down. I thought, oh, gee, we're not going to lose him, are we? But no, he was all right.
Judy,
but that was okay.
When you said at the beginning, the one that spins around, there's more than one.
My head was spinning for 2 hours after that spider.
Well, John, once bitten, twice shy.
I know, that's right.
Have a great night.
You do anything to help the scouts, you see?
Yes, indeed.
When you're a leader.
Large-hearted, Kayla.
Thank you.
I think John...
No, not our Kayla. That's in Cubs. Scouts, son. Scouts. You've never been in Scouts, have you?
No, look, I was spending most of those years in Tirana.
Oh, okay. I was called Rackshed.
Meshach and Bendigo.
Ah.
Thanks, John.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Yep. Oh, bye now. Anne's in Sandringham. How are things in Sandringham this evening down in Victoria, Anne?
They're nice, a little warm.
Yep.
But very pleasant. But good. When I heard that recollection of the teacups, I immediately thought my beautiful father, who only passed away recently, about 36 years ago, my brother and I used to terrorise him, begging him to take us on, was it called Mad Mouse or Mighty Mouse at the Royal Melbourne Show?
The Mad Mouse, I believe.
Yes, that one. And I will never forget the first time Daddy gave in and my little brother and I were strapped into the back and Daddy was in the front.
Yeah.
And off we went, and it was absolutely terrifying and magnificent.
Yes.
We got off, and my father sort of fell out of the car and then was promptly ill.
Oh dear.
He broke every rib on one side.
Oh, no. Really?
The seatbelt obviously wasn't tight enough, and he was thrown on the corners.
Oh, he fell out while the ride was in progress.
No, at the end.
Mm. Oh,
but he'd obviously throwing him.
Oh.
Yeah, and he'd broken all the ribs on one side. But bless him, he always promised we'd go on it again.
Gee, what a
guy. And we did.
Oh, and did he?
Yes, he did.
That,
but I think from memory...
He's got something that none of us have got.
Oh, he was a brave and devoted father.
Oh, that's courageous.
Thanks, guys. You have a great night.
Oh, well.
You too. Thanks, Anne.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye now. John's in Sorrento.
Hello there.
Hello, John.
Well, first thing I'd like to say is that chap earlier went to Tirana. I used to do emergency teaching at Tirana, and I'd like to say a prayer for him because that was a hellhole.
Yeah, not a good place to be, Tirana.
Nah, it was a hellhole.
You're in Sorrento, John. To get to Sorrento, you have to pass a couple of carnivals there in the summertime. I think they're at Rye, aren't they?
Yes, and the one thing is, when I grew up, I lived in Elwood, and the bloke over the road worked for GMH, and we used to take us to Luna Park because they used to hire out Luna Park.
Magnificent.
For their family day. And we used to get taken along. The Schultz family used to take us along. Mm. And every ride was free.
And
I always wanted to go on the rota, but I never had enough gumption.
Not too late. I think they still have the rota down there at Luna Park, John.
It's a long way, though, isn't it?
I've just been recently, but I'll report on that a little later.
No, the rota is the renamed Gravitron.
Oh, right.
They're one and the same.
Yep. Anyway, my son was down visiting me a few years ago. We went to the Roy Carney.
Yeah.
And he said, I want to go on that, Dad. And it's not the Mighty Mouse, but it was something very similar. And I've never been on, roller coaster in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, righto, Max, we'll go on that. Anyway, we're on it. And he's like, Dad, I'm not enjoying this very much. I said, neither am I, Max.
Well, if you find your way back to Luna Park, John, you should go on the scenic railway because it's a more benign roller coaster.
Railway.
Yeah, well, that's a cinch, the Scenic Railway.
I used to do the Scenic Railway. I did the first lap, and my brother, my older brother, said to the man, can he get off? He's scared. Yeah. And the man said, no, it's got another lap to go.
According to the children I took, the Scenic Railway was anything but benign. And they also did the other one, the Mad Mouse. Or
really?
Yeah, it's one of those ones where the name is a little bit misleading. It says the Scenic Railway, but it's only benign when compared to the Big Dipper or going up one more cog, the Mad Mouse.
But thank you, John.
Yeah, John, and John has a very endearing way of saying "and" between phrases.
Harry's in Wagga Wagga, which is just near Gumley Gumley. Hello, Harry.
Oh, I'm not too close to Gumley Gumley, I hope.
Yeah, well, Gumley Gumley's all right, isn't it?
Oh, I guess so. It's about as good for floating down the river. It's about the only time I go out there.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. How are you going?
Well, thanks. Experience in carnivals?
Oh, I'm not really a carnival as such. My partner and I were up at Gold Coast at the new Robina Mall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And some genius thought it'd be a great idea to put those water-absorbing balls out in the middle of the lake they've got going on there.
Yeah.
And I was as sober as a judge, and it still wasn't a good idea then.
Yeah.
It was just absolutely woeful. But I had some Indian birds in stitches.
Yeah.
They then you brought some pleasure to someone, and just not yourself.
It definitely wasn't me. I was running out of air very quickly because I've obviously got a watertight them.
Yeah.
And, I was very sore at the end of that day. It was not fun at all. Okay. I can't imagine being drunk. Yeah.
Well, they would have gone back to India and regaled their entire family and the family connections with your tale of woe, Harry.
Yeah, I'm not wrong.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers, buddy.
Well,
the lesson of that one, Harry, was Gold Coast is full of fraught with danger, and stay in Wagga Wagga for safety.
In Tweed Heads, Greg joins us on the soiree. Hello, Greg.
G'day, boys. How we doing?
Well, thank you.
I'm just going back to the what we call the sausage on the stick.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, a saveloy.
Yes.
For want of a better word, I guess. But when I used to go to the Brisbane exhibition, the R&A show up there.
Mm-hmm.
You used to come out of the train station and you'd run into what was called a Pluto pup stall.
Yeah.
And then you'd go around to the other area over near the wood shopping and you'd find the Dagwood dog stall.
And what was the difference between them?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Same but you sources, had to have one of each.
Same sources, same prices, wow. Same battered,
different
fried, not a stick.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I'll leave it with you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Well, we're talking carnival because our compadre Ian Cove is laid low by a rotating teacup. Madeline joins us. She's in Grenfell, New South Wales. Hello, Madeline.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you. Welcome. Great to have you on board.
Yes, but I had to tell you this story. This is years ago, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
At the Royal Bathurst Show, a new ride was out from America called the Turbo.
Yeah.
And my sister and I, we didn't have to line up because we were the only ones there. And actually, the fellow, it was my first introduction to rhyming slang because he said, you'd have to be skin and blisters. And we looked at each other and said, no, we're not sunburned. Anyway. So we got on this machine that was sort of like the octopus, but it had individual cages, egg-shaped.
Oh,
and so the fellow put us in, and a bar came across your stomach and then shut the cage.
Yes.
And then started it off. Well, these things actually spun round like a washing machine themselves. And my sister and I were screaming, help.
Hmm.
We were bawling our eyes out. And we were, when it'd go upside down and our legs and arms were hanging on the bar and coins were falling out and... Hmm. He had to stop the ride.
Wow.
We were just, oh, it was horrendous.
Madeline, I have seen that before, and as soon as the ride does stop and the kids get out, it's, oh, that was great fun. Can we do it again?
Yeah.
Despite the tears and the protestations. Wasn't you and your sister, though?
We had very sheltered rides, let me tell you. We never went on it again.
Mm.
But, I love rides anyway. It didn't scar me that badly.
That's good.
Imagine being the operator of a ride that kids just scream to get out of. It would be kind of a tough day at the office.
Take you to court these days, emotional pain and suffering.
The turbo.
Madeline, I'm so glad you rang.
I am too, and can I recall years ago you were talking about what you do with sausage chisels and the leftover cold sausages.
I seem to recall that.
I do, and look, I laughed and laughed. It was great entertainment coming back from the snow one year.
Good on you, Madeline. All the best.
Yeah. Okay, you too. Thanks.
Bye-bye now. Chris is in Ballarat. Hello, Chris.
Yeah, g'day. How are you?
Well, good, thank you.
Pop Dog.
Yeah.
Oh, Pop Dog. That's another
Pop
name
Dog
for
was
them.
The one. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a fake about back in the 70s. The Catholic school used to run a school fundraiser, fate.
Yeah.
And you know, it had the Apex wheel, which I haven't seen in a long, long time. It used to, you know, win prizes on the third and second and first row.
Uh-huh.
Yes, but there was no gambling involved.
No, you just buy a ticket.
Just speculation.
Yeah, that's right. It was just for fun.
Yes, for fun. But these Pop Dogs, we had a few stray dogs that were hanging around the school at the time.
Uh-huh.
And the Pop Dogs were only sort of half eaten or one bite out of them, and they were just dropped on the ground, and not even the dogs would have a go at
They'd
just leave them alone, you know, like you'd be standing on them, but the dogs never ever went near them.
Oh, I thought you were going to speculate that the stray dogs might have ended up in the Pop Dogs.
Well, I wouldn't have a clue, but maybe not enough sauce on them or something, I don't know. But the dogs didn't like them.
Gee,
but there was a ride there that was not a ride. It's the go-kart track with the little motors on the back, and the kiddies could get on them, and you just go around driving around in a circle, tyres laying on the dirt. And the young fellow that was running it, he had spiderweb tattoos on his neck, and you know, he's quite a sort of, back in those days, either a bodgy or something. Bodgies and widgies and all that stuff. And this, and of course, when the kiddies get in, they're strapped in, and they just touch the pedal a little bit because you've got to wait for the flag or something, or there was a horn or something that went off. And they'd roll forward a little bit, and this bloke that was running it would jump onto the go kart and stomp on their ankles, tell them to keep their feet off the pedal until the siren went.
That's
terrible, you know. He was going around. He did it to about three kids.
I think it's called tough love, isn't it, Chris?
Oh, something. Oh, bloody, it was disgraceful. And I'm thinking, this has got to stop. Somebody's going to do something. And sure enough, this fellow that had his kid on the go kart just knocked him straight out. I've never seen it. I was only about 14. Just walked up and just knocked him out, left him on the dirt. And it was quite a shock. So they had to bring in another fellow. I think he was working the Apex wheel, and he came in and ran it.
Where were his tats?
I've got no idea.
I hope he was a bit more light on his feet.
Those were the days.
Those were the days.
Good on you, Chris.
Thanks very much.
Hooray now. Up in Sydney, Mark rings. Hello, Mark.
Hello, champs.
Yeah. How are you?
Good, Mark.
Good Saturday to you guys. Weekend. It's nice and sunny up here for once.
You're in Surry Hills, aren't you?
Yes, that's right.
Nice spot, Surry Hills.
Now, I recently just travelled down to Gippsland.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Pretty good. Nice little trip. And now we're getting back onto the sideshow rides and whatever. It was as tame as the chairs. I got on there and we went at the wrong time of day. We went about lunch, just after lunch. Had something to eat beforehand. I went on the chairs. And round and round this thing went. It didn't stop. Went on for about 10 minutes. I got off the thing, finally. And I went over to a little corner I thought was quiet. And had a little bit of a chuck up and under.
Yes.
A bit of rear action at the same time.
Oh, dear.
You can imagine the looks on people's faces.
The humiliation.
It was. I've never forgotten it.
Gee.
How old were you, Mark?
I was about 11.
Right.
Goodness.
I lost my first wallet as well.
Oh, yeah. No.
You know, it all happened.
Oh.
And you couldn't wait to get back to the carnival the year after.
I don't think I went back.
Yeah, I wouldn't have.
Ever.
Thanks, Mark.
Good on you.
And welcome back to the Could Have Been Champion Saturday Soiree. Billy Baxter, Greg Champion, Jeff Richardson with you here in the studio. Ian Cover, unwell. will be joining us later on for Magic Moments. And in the program tonight, we can expect Scott Watkinsully with his recipe. He's demystifying a beverage this evening. Not so much a comestible, but a convivial. And Dan Dinnan, Melbourne troubadour, will be troubing his door with us later in the program as well. Magic Moments and Champs' music, all manner of things. Great to have your company. Gents, before the news, we were talking about carnivals. Yes. And Terry in Wilmot down there in Tassie has been kind enough, as have another couple of listeners, to hold on through the news. Thanks, Terry.
Yeah, mate. Don't worry about your Dagwood dogs. What about the hot American donuts? Watch them cooking, turning, churning all the time. And they'd fall out of this big chute into into a great vat of sugar.
And if you're lucky, that tape that is telling you to watch them turning, turning and cooking is quite stretched, and it sort of goes like this a bit. Yeah, they're the best.
Yeah, and they'd usually be like two of these vans, and the tapes were running on different spurs.
Yeah.
You get one that's really like up tempo, and the other one, the donut, seemed to come out slower if the tape was slow.
That is a very good guess.
Did they have a jam, Terry?
No, they were just your bareback smothered in cinnamon sugar.
Fantastic.
Terry, a few weeks ago on the program, I was reminiscing about the same thing from the Royal Adelaide Show in the 60s, where I can still remember the recording. It would say, they're making, they're baking, they're delicious, see one actually being made.
Yes, I only had it roughly. I knew you'd know it.
Is that script the same script?
No, there'd be a special Adelaide one.
I think they travel. They don't just stay in Adelaide.
That's true.
That is the text.
And it's never
that's
left
magic.
Me. Yeah. Even then, it peeved me as a 10-year-old.
Mm. Well, see, these modern marketers, they could learn something, couldn't they?
They could. I was at a show this year, and they haven't changed the recording.
that's great.
It's nice to know some things in life remain constant, Terry.
It hasn't gone digital. I think it's still on a cassette
player. That is great.
8-track cartridge patch. Terry, have a great night.
Have a good night, guys.
Terry.
Just within metres of the blowhole, probably getting covered with a salt spray, George is in Kiama. Hello, George.
How you going, boys?
Thanks. George.
I'll tell you what, my mouth's watering after that donut.
You can see one actually being made, George.
Oh, gee, that brings back some memories. another memory. Mm. Do they still have the octopuses?
Yeah,
I believe they do.
Show,
So I've got a little story about the first time the octopus came to the Mossfire show.
Yeah.
That was back in the 60s. So it was the first time, and Saturday afternoon, sunny day, a lot of people were interested in this. There was a really big crowd around the octopus, you know.
Mm.
And you know how you'd get on the octopus and you'd sort of try and pick your one, the one that span, you know, especially take your girlfriend on, and you try to get it to spin as it went around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd usually get the real stiff one, but there was always that one that really span, you know.
Mm.
So anyway, this day, there's three girls on this one that really span. And they were screaming to let them off. And they were yelling out, please, please, please. And they just thought that was very funny. And they were attractive young girls, so they kept it going.
Yeah.
And the crowd was all in there. And you know how it sort of, they'd actually come out around over the top of the crowd.
Yes.
Well, finally, one of these girls, the reason she was screaming was because she was about to let go.
Oh, dear.
And she did. And it was spinning.
Oh.
And the terrible thing was that while the people underneath were getting... You remember those sprinklers that used to go around and that sort of spray around?
The old Pope sprinkler.
Yeah, it was just like that.
Oh.
But the problem was that the people who were out of range thought this was the funniest thing
they would.
And wanted to crowd in to see what was happening. And all the people who were in the range just had these eyes as big as saucers trying to get out of there.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it. I was about 10, 11 years old.
George, thank you so much for sharing it with us tonight. Now, we'll never forget it.
Mm-hmm.
See ya.
All right. Tim's in Edenhope. Are you mobile, are you, Tim?
I am, guys. I'll just pull over and do the right thing.
Good on you.
How you going?
Well, thanks.
good. This story is 20 years in the making. I'm from Mount Gambier originally in South Australia, and the Mount Gambier show's a lot of fun. And I went with, I can't remember if it's my older brother or my cousin. We went on what's the spooky ride and called the Ghost Train, and that came to Mount Gambier a lot. And it basically jumped on a little railroad, and it just went around in a circle, but people jumped out or things jumped out and scared you.
Yeah.
I went with my older cousin or my brother, I forget which one, but basically one bloke jumped out in a sheet and went boo. I then discovered that my brother was a martial artist and knocked him clean out. And so what happens is you sort of go through one door and it's oh, and then you come out the other end and you're usually freaking scaring, that sort of thing. We came out looking like we'd shot a deer because we had this ghost sort of slumped over the front of our car. And around, I still remember the round of applause we got because, you know, like Ghost Hunters Anonymous, and we've gone and knocked out this ghost. So that was pretty funny. The next time I jumped on a spooky thing was up in Queensland at one of the big three parks, and I was doing some work with people with disabilities, and we were up there on a trip for the bowling, for the Tenpin Bowling, and we went on, I thought I'd try and take the tamest one, obviously being scarred when I was very younger, and we jumped on the Scooby-Doo Spooky Coaster.
Yeah.
That starts off very tame with a few little things, and you go around in a circle. I thought, well, that's it, that's all good, and we went into this little room, and then the next thing I know, we're in this elevator going up three stories, and then we end up in a warehouse on one of the craziest roller coasters I reckon I've ever been on in my life, and looking very apologetically at a bloke that said, I just want to go on something that's really tame.
Mm-hmm.
And the spooky coaster for Scooby-Doo was seriously one of those ones that prepares you and lulls you into a false sense of security, and then it leaves you feeling very very shattered at the end of it.
Scooby don't, more like.
Yeah, Scooby did not, and I was not very happy with him. He's a very jovial fellow, but I wasn't smiling at the end of it, fellas.
Well, there have been a few tales of violence around show rides tonight.
And well worth the 20 years in the making.
Yeah, it was actually, yeah. It flashed me back, but I just love talking about carnivals because some of the best times you can have are at the show. And
you bet.
Yeah.
Good on you, Tim.
Have a good night, guys.
Yeah, happy travels.
Cheers.
Thanks, Tim.
Could have been champion Saturday soiree here on ABC Local Radio. Greg, you weren't here last week, but I did hear you on the wireless as I was driving home, because Scotty Lamond was kind enough to invite you on Saturday Night Country to report directly from Tamworth's Night of Nights.
Yes, we went into ABC Studios. Now, normally they're out the back of the venue around the backstage area broadcasting from there, but this year they're back in the ABC Studios in town. And from 10 o'clock, they announced the winners, and we had a succession of artists come through the doors and sing on Saturday Night Country. Fliss was comparing. She compares the awards. So she's moved on from the glory of hosting Saturday Night Country to actually having a comparing.
Well, she's a local girl. What better than to have a local hosting your awards?
Well, she's got a great style and class in that area, hasn't she?
A good kid, Phyllis.
One little magic that I might mention that you won't find in these programs that I've brought back for you to browse is, now, you two gentlemen, you could have been, have heard of the well-known brothers duo, Hamish and Lachlan Davidson.
Oh, very familiar with the Davidson brothers. They got a gong.
They're always turning up gongs these days at Tamworth. Now, just Hamish and Lachlan, just on the subject of Christian names for a minute, Hamish and Lachlan are, Lachlan is a top 10 name, but they're in vogue. Wouldn't you say that, Richo? Hamish and Lachlan? You're getting a lot of that in the kiddies these days, right? So here's two...
They're popular names.
Well, especially Lockie, and Hamish not far behind. Now, what happens when you read a country music write-up if somebody has not heard the L on Lachlan? What do you think Lachlan may have been spelt as in an awards write-up if somehow...
Rockland.
Not Rockland. No, the L was somehow not heard. So you have to...
The front one.
So there's no vowel...
Ogden?
There's no vowel at the start at all. No consonant. No consonant at the start.
Well, and the spelling has then morphed into something quite unbelievable.
You're going to have to tell us.
Yes.
Auckland.
Oh! Auckland.
Hamish and Auckland Davidson.
Some say is a lovely place. I've only ever seen the airport many, many times, and it's really nice.
Imagine if they'd done it to both the boys, Danish and Auckland. Well-travelled Davidson
now,
brothers.
From one side of the globe to the other.
Do you think, now, was that spell check, or was that a, you know, human error typo? Well, not a typo.
I'd like to think it was a human error, wouldn't you?
Well, Auckland, we don't find many kitties being called Auckland.
Perhaps we should. Kitties called Dakota and Montana, so why not Auckland?
Indiana.
Yeah. Oh, it's just a little magic.
Good kids, the Davidson brothers. They're from the hills of Victoria, I think, aren't they?
They're from Yennar, from the little village of Yennar. And when it comes to quaint sounding Aussie place names, Yennar is right up there. Y-I-N-N-A-R.
You know what I think? I think the Chinese tennis player should defect from her country and go live there. It should be Li Na from Yunnan.
Li Na from Yunnan.
Because you can always say, you know, you know.
So that's probably what the footballers are saying when they give interviews. Now, I remember one of the two, it'll be Hamish Davidson, he plays the banjo. If I got that, yes, that is right. He told me once that he used to, and this is what banjo players have to do, he used to get up at 6, take his banjo, walk down the street and play it on the corner because Yennar has about 40 people or something.
Yeah.
But when he went down the corner, no one could hear it.
Yeah, otherwise, the practicing annoyed people.
Well, and I remember another fanatical and wonderful banjo player, Trev Warner, from Adelaide, telling me that he worshipped at the Temple of Banjo, that every morning he got up, played his banjo, and had his spiritual experience at 7 in the morning.
Is his kid Kim Warner? Yeah. Is he in the green cards?
That's Kim's dad, Trev.
The
bluegrass runs through the family there.
So it's in the best tradition of Flat and Scruggs. I forget which one, either Flat or Scruggs. Mm. They used to do the same thing.
I think Earl Scruggs was the banjo player.
He and his brother, I've forgotten his name, they used to do their practicing early in the morning for the same reason.
Yeah. Doug Scruggs.
They had a trick where they would start playing something and just to see how well they were keeping tempo, one would turn left and the other would turn right, and they'd go around the block and see if they were still on the beat when they met.
That's terrific. Wow. And I bet they were more often than not.
Wow. Well, there are probably not many places on this earth, although there are some, where you can take your guitar, get up in the morning, take your banjo, walk down the corner and be comfortable. You're not heard by anyone at 6 in the morning when you want to play and practice. But that's just a little Davidson story. Tamworth, yes.
Should have played Reveille, shouldn't he?
I told you that I had the ride in the Gyrocopter.
Not only that, you shared photos. Andy, has Greg given you the photo of him in the Gyrocopter to put on our website? Maybe you could do that because our listeners would like to see
it. It's a picture of Greg in a Gyrocopter, and the Gyrocopter is in a truck. So
it's on the back of a trailer where it should be.
No machines were harmed or put at risk in the making of this photo.
And you were waving at the people?
You were because there's between 5,000 and 10,000 people in that parade. Wow. That's a lot of people to wave to. So you do find yourself waving your head off or your arm, as you might expect. I suppose you feel like the Queen just for a moment or two there. The Gyrocopter's a two-seater. They're front and back. And they do have a side-by-side one. I was getting a bit of info about Gyrocopters. Uh-huh. These are imported from Germany.
Really?
And this is a hot orange one, as you could see in the photos. Uh-huh. We'll put the photos on the radio. You might be able to see them through your speakers. But riding down the street in a Gyrocopter was a singular experience. Out at the awards, I did pop out there just prior to the actual ceremony. 5,000 people, or is it 4 to 5, go to that gig. They have a red carpet. Certain buffoons, namely Pete Dennehy, Cole Buchanan, and I'm told Jim Haynes, get to stand around on the red carpet and I think hold the mic and do the interviews. That would be a bit of a hoot. But you
only heard about that.
That's right. I'm waiting for the call. Yeah. But there's another Tamworth come and gone. That's 22, and there's still a lot of fun. A lot of people, a little more than last year because the Queensland floods knocked out a lot of Queensland people last year.
Do you recall who got the gongs, Greg? the major ones?
I didn't pay a whole lot of attention. If we look at the list there, we could it'll all come back to me. But I think the Davidson Brothers did win instrumental. There's one that sticks in my mind.
The Rising Star was a gentleman who's been around for some odd years. See. He's got a sort of bluegrassy type.
So his rising has taken a while.
Was it Bob Corbett?
Or Bob Corbett.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bob Corbett has one Rising Star.
The Jetty Road won something?
I think they did. Maybe they won group or duo. So.
Where's. I'm just. Sorry. Here we go. Oh no, that's the APRA Song Award.
Ah, yes, I attended the Songwriting Awards also. That's another set. And I also attended the People's Choice Awards.
Well, out of all those three plus everything else, what was the highlight?
Highlight? I'll tell you what the highlight was.
The Buskers. Standout.
There's two. I'll give you two highlights right now. Mm. Here's your magics.
Yeah.
Andy Baylor. Cajun Combo
yep.
plays every afternoon at 3 p.m. about 5 days straight. If you've got some free time, you pop down to see Andy Baylor because he's great, and his sidekick Sam LeMann is a god of guitar and has the chops to die for.
Mm.
And you can swoon, I do, watching Sam play. They brought the other magic is. That an American guitarist, Billy, who'd been played for Merle Haggard, was out playing at the Leagues Club, and he was doing nightly shows in a free area at midnight.
What's his name?
With an Australian, Red Volkert.
Oh, he's enormously famous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Red was there. Now, Red's got to be in his 60s and possibly higher. And he's short, and he's round, and he wears a baseball cap, and he's got the voice to die for, and sounds quite like Junior Brown.
Yeah. Oh, yes, he's highly regarded in his field, Red Volkert.
So Red's there virtually every night, but the night I went, and I believe he had an Australian pickup band, but the night I went, he was backing an Australian young singer, Victoria Bailey. So I didn't get to see Red stretch out in his full glory, but he still ripped off some solos, which showed us all, and there were guitarists standing around admiring Red, and Sam LeMann was one of them, and there were plenty of musicians there to get the full Red experience. Another magic at Tamworth, of course, is always going to see the shows of... there's a little bit of music coming on.
That's a bit of your Red Volkert right there.
He plays a telly. Has he got a telly there?
Yep.
Here he goes. Junior Brown style.
He looks like a jolly seafaring fellow, doesn't he?
He does, yeah, because he wears that kind of hat, and he's kind of Western swing.
Yeah.
There he is. When I greet my neighbor with a high
evil, when I'm wealthy as a king upon a throne. So Red made it out.
Yes.
I can imagine him being very popular down there.
Oh, that was a highlight because the musos were flocking to see Red rip off a solo. And Kevin Bennett is always a highlight. Going to watch Kevin, and he has a host of top musicians, and the musos tend to flock to see Kevin. That's kind of the musos, muso gig.
Mm.
So there's just a few things to do at Tamworth. But look, years ago, they said Tamworth had 900 individual events and was the biggest festival in the world for individual events. Now, that was 10-odd years ago. Maybe there's 1,500 individual events now. That's a lot for a festival.
Is it too big? Has it got too big?
No, it's not, because it's a big town. It doubles in size, and you can still get a bed. So I don't think anyone's complaining.
But you know what hasn't doubled in size?
Got too large.
That's the guitar-shaped pool. Look... I don't wish to denigrate the guitar show pool, and I enjoyed my time in it, and I think, Billy, you enjoyed your time in it as well.
I'm still talking about it.
But it wasn't as big as I thought it was going to be.
You know what? It doesn't have to be.
When you started swimming, you got you got from the bridge to the nut fairly quickly.
You did. Jeff, I saw some photos of the original launch of the guitar show pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, they ran some photos of when it was first opened. I think Slim... was there for the opening.
I bet Slim wasn't in his speedo.
No, he didn't go in those. I also attended a launch of John Williamson's new album too, and heard him play tracks from his new album.
I think that's good.
In a cafe in an arcade.
Return to traditional values for John. Slim would have driven Old Purple into the pool.
That's right. Old Purple. I heard a bit about Old Purple up there. Old Purple, I think, had been trotted out for display purposes.
It was Glenn Fry of the Eagles there, was he?
No. Does it say that?
There's a picture of him in the book.
Yeah. Welcome all visitors to the 40th Tamworth Country Music Festival, January 2012. Troy Cassar Daly, Glenn Fry of the Eagles.
Gee. Yeah, there's pictures of him in the book that you brought back.
If he was there, it's the first I've heard of it.
It might be just an ad for the brand of guitar they both use, but it is a little misleading. Not that I want to...
If he had been there, Bill...
Yeah? If he had?
If he had been there...
Yeah, well, it could have been Champion Saturday soiree.
I would have gone to the front row and I would have gone, Oi, do Peaceful Easy Feeling. Because it's a real favourite.
Yeah.
Could I just raise something here? I went to the Tamworth website to see the list of nominees. It's nowhere on there. And I've been looking through this thing here, and there's not a list of the nominees either.
Richo's got them.
What page, Richo?
The list of nominees.
Just thumb through the early pages, Richo. You'll find
it comes up fairly early, does it?
Yeah.
You said Richo's got it. I've got the same book as him.
No, a different book.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you're looking at
what about you? Giving me the rummy one, have you?
What to expect? You'd think I'd be getting a bit close there.
Well, I've got the festival program.
Here we are. Awards.
Raw Prawn Bill.
Here we go. I've got them now. Billy, go to page 14.
No, different book.
No, we've got different books.
Oh, well, there you go.
I've got Bush Poets to be recognised.
Here we go. Look, I've got the nominations. Group or Dud of the Year. Oh, the Group or Duo of the Year. Had a bit of an Auckland moment there. In that was the Bobcats, Carter and Carter, the Davidson Brothers, Jetty Road and O'Shea. So who won out of that?
I think Jetty Shea might. But then O'Shea might have got something. It might have been O'Shea.
It doesn't matter, but I'm just saying that they should.
Jetty Road might have won it before.
Yeah.
All right.
So they should pump it up a little.
Collaboration of the Year. Adam Harvey and Becky Cole. Sarah Storer and Graham Roger. Kirsty Akers and Bob Evans, Becky Cole and Casey Chambers,
Joe
Nicholson and Paul Kelly. Who won that?
Becky and Casey won that.
Becky and Casey won that.
Album of the Year.
Thank you.
Graham Connors, Shane Nicholson, Adam Harvey, Keith Urban, Becky Cole.
I got Keith, I think.
Keith got that, yeah.
But Keith, did he turn up?
Keith couldn't be there. I think he was in America at the time.
Was there a video tribute? Well, he shouldn't have been allowed to win.
Well, he's put in a lot of yards at Tamworth, old Keithy.
Well, then.
Yeah. What else?
All right. Best selling record of the year. This is more in your people's choice sort of category, isn't it? Adam Harvey, Keith Urban, John Williamson, or Casey Chambers.
Keith will take that because he's got the American market.
Yeah. But he's not allowed to count his American numbers in it, is he?
Good question.
Who won it?
I don't know.
I think Keith might have won that.
Okay.
All right.
Although Adam Harvey won an award too.
Female Artist of the Year was between Alice Simmons, Jasmine Ray, Katrina Burgoyne, Kirsty Akers, or Becky Cole.
Well, Becky won that.
Yeah, there's some new names there. Yeah. Becky, the only sort of traditional heavyweight there.
Yeah, very much so.
Alice Simmons, they call her.
Yeah. Male Artist of the Year.
Yeah.
Keith Urban, Shane Nicholson, Adam Harvey, Graham Connors, or James Blundell.
Yes, Adam might have won that one.
Yes, Adam did win that, Gregory.
Now, this is the one you were talking about before, Billy, the new talent of the year.
Yeah.
It was out of Luke Dickens, Jason Lee, Alice Simmons, who we mentioned
Alice,
before.
Yeah, they call her.
Katrina Burgoyne, and someone just called O'Shea.
Yes, that's...
They don't seem to have a first name.
I think O'Shea won that.
Yeah, that's correct. O'Shea's the winner.
All right, but now we come
O'Shea has moved to the States.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. Well, they shouldn't have been allowed
just like
win.
Jed, what's his face?
Yeah, he's been there a lot. Jed,
clamp it. Now, that'll do.
Now, of course, we come to the all-important video clip of the year. Sarah Storer and
this.
Kev
you
Carmody.
Did? First year.
Lee Kernan had one.
Well, the first one you mentioned won.
Did it? The Sarah Storer and Kev Carmody one. Children of the Gurindji.
Yeah. They call her Sarah in the country.
Kirsty Akers and Bob Evans were in it, and Adam Harvey was in it.
Hearts.
And last of all,
instrumental.
Song of the Year.
Oh, yeah.
We had a song called Bad Machines.
Yes, by Shane Nicholson.
That's a great song.
A song called Butterfly.
By Tamara.
Liv Mason.
A song called Falling Into Place.
By Adam Harvey.
A song called The Mouth of the River.
That would be by Graham Connors.
Yeah. And a song called Waitress.
And that was by?
Becky Cole.
Becky, of course. Yeah, do you know
who won
Shane
that?
Won.
Shane, with Bad Machines.
Mm.
What's it about, Bill?
Oh, 3.5 minutes.
What are the Bad Machines that are referred to? I shouldn't be displaying my
Now we come to some of the more interesting categories, which they don't sort of get the
Bush Ballad.
Top billing. These are ones I like. There's Bush Ballad of the Year, Heritage Song of the Year, and I like the nuanced distinction between Heritage Song and Bush Ballad.
It is a world of difference. Don't you worry about that. The theses have been written on what qualifies.
What's the difference between a Heritage Song and a Bush Ballad of the Year? So,
Pandora's Box.
I'll run down the list of songs and you tell me, based on the list,
whether
they're a Bush Ballad or whether they're Heritage.
Can't tell it from the title.
Well, you've got a 50-50 chance, right? Yeah. This first list is A Fencer from the Outback.
Sounding pretty Bush Ballad.
Yeah. Channel Country Ground.
Mm.
Gentleman Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Keandra Gold.
Yeah, you've got to have a place name in there.
Or Son of the Red Dirt Country.
Oh, these are sounding pretty Bush Ballad.
Yeah.
Well, Greg, see, you understand that. I've got no idea, but yeah, they're all in the Bush Ballad of the Year.
The winner went to, I think, Keandra, was it? Keandra
Gold by Brian Letton.
No. What was the winner, Bill?
Don't know.
Give us the five again quickly.
Fence from the Outback, Channel Country Gold, Gentleman Joe, Keandra Gold, fair bit of gold in there, and Son of the Red Dirt Country.
The five artists.
I think
we got Rod Williams, Lee Kernaghan, Diane Lindsay, Brian Letton, and Graham Rogers.
I think Lee Kernaghan went up with Channel Country Gold. Is that correct? Channel Country Ground.
Ground.
Channel Country Ground. Okay, let's give us Heritage.
All right, this is Heritage.
This is something that you should win one day, Greg.
Okay, I like to.
First one up there was Australian Woman.
Oh. Yep.
The second one was Bondwood Boat.
Yes.
Then here's a song just called I Am Australian, written by Dave Newton and Bruce Woodley,
that one.
And recorded by the Bushwhackers.
That one.
That's the winner.
But
it's the recording that's won. Dave Rutko wrote
it. Might be a different song.
But why didn't it win it 25 years ago?
Oh, they must have just, Bushy's only just got around to recording it.
Hadn't got its heritage listing back then.
I took a walk down Peel Street.
Ah, yes.
As you do, and I started to make a note of the songs I heard so that you could fill out the song titles. I only got two down on that walk.
Right.
And these aren't your straight up the guts country songs. Nevertheless, you can fill out the song titles. Are you ready?
Yes.
Got your finger on the buzzer?
Yes, please.
I'm
a working on the railway.
I'm a lovely bunch of coconut.
I'm
one more word only.
Is it really country?
It's a Willie Nelson song. That'll give it away for you.
All right.
I'm easy.
That's a
that won an Oscar.
That's an Eric Bogle song.
I'm the Red-Headed Stranger.
I'm crazy.
No, that's just called crazy.
Well, you're right. But if I'd said that, we wouldn't have had a quiz.
Yeah, very good point. Very good point.
And then this is not a straight up the guts country one, but it is still in the zone four. As in F-O-U-R.
Strong Winds.
Yes, Four Strong Winds are the two songs that I managed to write on the pad before I got into that little walk in Peel Street.
Right.
A couple of nice songs, a couple of very nice songs. You might want to hear Take Me Home, Country Roads, Help Me Make It Through the Night, and Me and Bobby McGee.
Yeah.
But they're the two that I did hear.
This is fantastic, these things you can do. I've just got the Tamworth book here.
Mm-hmm.
After going to Tamworth, if you've got any money left, for just $7,500, you can spend 15 days on a country music tour of Europe.
Yes, well, how bizarre.
15 days of luxury river cruising from Amsterdam to Budapest.
Yeah.
You can experience true luxury as you cruise through the five countries between Amsterdam and Budapest on your floating five-star hotel. When you're not asleep, you can have line dance sessions hosted by Tim Glover. Do you know him?
Not
Chris Watson, Alison Johnson, they're doing the line dancing. And then when you're puffed out from line dancing, you can sit down and Graham Connors will sing songs to you.
Yeah.
And another fellow named Darren Coggan.
Well, Darren's famous.
Is he? Well, they'll sing your songs and you fly for free.
But fluff and free.
Yeah, free and at no cost. But you do have to pay $7,500. And look at that picture there. See, a beautiful
I've had a look
Hansel
at that
and Gretel countryside.
Already, because I've been fascinated, like a Danube cruise.
Why don't you go on a cruise?
Well, I'm going on one in October,
to
November.
To perform?
Yes.
Performing?
Oh, where's
yes.
yours
Tell
going?
Us all.
We're going to Noumea for a week in October, November.
Mm-hmm.
And Becky's on it, Troy's on it.
Ah. Oh. You'll have that much fun.
It's not quite cruising down the Rhine, but sounds good.
Yes, in a way, it might be the South Seas might be a better thing, but I wouldn't mind giving the Rhine a crack. Gee, how much country music culture, especially Australian, would you expect to get on a Rhine cruise?
Well, if the whole cruise is full of people from Tamworth,
well, if it is,
there'd be plenty.
If they fill it up.
Yeah.
I know, you're going past these little Hansel and Gretel villages on the Rhine and they hear all this music coming out the windows of the boat. They go, what's that?
What happened there?
Take your quells.
Take your what, sir?
Quells.
Oh, well, country music, it's just pushing back the boundaries. So is your one in here, Greg?
Yes, it is.
Oh, I'm looking for it. Country cruises, that seems to be the new thing. There's another
exciting.
One going to the Caribbean that has who would sing to you if you went.
And what do you do? Do you do like a matinee and then an evening performance, or what's the go?
Good question. This will be my first.
Oh,
they're nightly shows, and whether there are two kind of shows per evening is yet to be seen. I've yet to find out.
I should hope you'll be telling us all about sitting at the captain's table.
Oh, right? This is the one you want to go on,
Greg.
Hope
they don't take it too close to the islands.
You go on a boat in the Caribbean, right? And it sails around, where does it go? Key West, Nassau, St. Martin's.
Sounds
and then
like
when it gets to
Beach Boys song.
It gets to Miami, and then you join a motorhome convoy.
Oh, now you're talking. Now you're
and that drives you
That's
all the
go.
Way to Nashville,
Tennessee.
Yeah, and I thought it was had Adam Harvey on it, but that's the name of the travel agent. But
a motorhome convoy doesn't
Greg,
get much
is,
better
is,
than that.
So you're on one of these. I'm trying to find yours. So
you cruise around and you get yourself your motorhome in a convoy.
It's the way to do it.
Well. I wonder how many.
Here's one that goes around the Liverpool Plains.
Make a convoy.
It's not quite the same.
Mm. Liverpool Plains, where's that?
The Liverpool Plains? Oh, it's, Gunnedah.
Well, is it Gunnedah or going to Dar?
Is that a cruise as well?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, it's probably another motorhome convoy. Scone, Mirrawa, Coolah, Coonabarra Brand, Gunnedah, then you finish up in Tamworth.
Hmm. I've just had a look at the Get On Board Cruising Country number 2.
Yeah.
This is who it features.
Yep.
There's no more room for customers after this.
Yeah.
Featuring the cream of Australian country music, Casey Chambers and Shane Nicholson, Troy Cassadaly, the McClymonts, Becky Golf, Lucy Urquhart, Malcalister Kemp, the Wolverines, Bluegrass All-Stars, Larry Cann, Greg Champion, On the Road Again, William Roy, the musical, plus clogging and square dancing lessons and performances, only $1,434 per person, twin share, 1956. You gotta get there.
I can top this one. Put on your line dancing shoes, pop your Akubra for this fun-filled, action-packed trip with the Sunny Cowgirls to Phuket, Thailand.
There you go. The Sunny Cowgirls.
And that one's only $2,500.
Taking people to Thailand.
I tell you, this is the new direction
for country music.
Could have been champions here Saturday soiree. Time to check in with Scott Watkinselli. Hello, Scotty.
Hello there, Billy.
Good to have you on board again.
Yep.
We're not demystifying a comestible tonight, but a convivial.
That's right, yeah. We're going down the liquid refreshment path, and one of my very favourite liquid refreshments. Sounds like I've had a few, doesn't it?
It does, indeed. Have another one.
One of my very favourite refreshments.
A liquishment. Yes.
Yeah, that's
great. Okay, tell us about this liquishment.
Well, we're going to look at the Irish coffee because, look, myth number one, Irish coffees belong in the realm of the 1970s pitch.
Well, that's what I'd always thought, that it was, in fact, a mythical, not actually Irish thing, but was invented as something for people to have in Man From U.N.C.L.E. shows.
It's kind of Irish. It's kind of got some Irish origin.
Oh, really?
But I also, like, you know, in saying that it belongs in 70s kitchens, what we've turned it into, we've abused it by, you know, myth number two, that Irish coffees can be made with whipped cream from a can. Right. That should never happen. That's a myth. It's, you know, that is not an Irish coffee. It's got whipped cream from a can on top of it. It's basically, it's, you know, it's some sort of ice cream dessert, you know. It's not an Irish coffee. But the origins actually are just in Ireland, very, very slightly.
How slight is slightly, Scotty?
Well, yeah, during the 1940s, it is alleged that passengers disembarked. This would have been a stopover between possibly New York and somewhere in Britain. A group of passengers disembarked from the Pan Am flying boat in County Limerick at the port. There was a port where there was a restaurant, and the port itself was known as Foynes, which was basically it's a little hotel where the flying boats pulled up to,
right.
Which is near where Shannon Airport is now, right?
Yeah.
In County Limerick, but this would have been in the 40s, and one night during, you know, a very, very bleak winter, the chef, who apparently was called Davina Davidson, decided to chuck a few tots of whiskey into the coffee to warm up these very, very cold American travellers, and at the time, apparently one of the Americans asked, "Is this Brazilian coffee?" Which the reply was, "No, it's Irish coffee."
And a legend was born.
And a legend was born. And from that, apparently around that time, not sure if it was actually on that flight, but there was the travel writer Stanton Delaplaine, who was a writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. He decided to, you know, make a variation on that and bought the coffee to the Buena Vista Cafe in San Francisco. And of course, San Francisco is very famous for Irish coffees. If you walk along Fisherman's Wharf and all that area there, everywhere advertises the best Irish coffee in San Francisco.
So know? It really sort of took off in San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah.
That's its origin. What, this would have been in the 50s, say?
In the 50s, the first time, apparently, with the addition of cream, they can put it down to the 10th of November, 1952.
That's fantastic.
And he and the owners of the Buena Vista Cafe worked so tirelessly to it one evening to perfect the method of floating the cream on it that they nearly passed out at the end of the evening from drinking so many.
Well, it was a very social club then at the Buena Vista.
Say they worked to perfect it, I assume they succeeded, and there is a way to properly make a classic San Francisco Irish coffee.
Well, yeah, that's right. And there's a couple of things. I mean, Irish coffees should not be made with espresso, as the viscosity of espresso is different and stops the single cream from floating on the top. I'd say it would be something to do with oils in it, something to do with the crema. It should be made with fresh American-style granulated coffee,
right,
which we all love so much. But this isn't about the coffee, it's about the whiskey. And it's been suggested that the single cream be opened and aged for 48 hours before being used for this task. Whether that's
really
out of the fridge, I don't know. I assume that's open in the fridge.
So that's what all these joints on Fisherman's Wharf would do, you would expect.
Well, one would hope so if they're trying to be authentic about it all.
That kind of makes sense, Scotty, because having worked in a milk bar, you couldn't get the right consistency with fresh milk. You had to wait a couple of days for the milk to deaden a little bit, and then you would get your consistency that you so desired.
Well, it's a similar thing with getting coffee, you know, or sorry, milk to froth for making cappuccinos, etc. You know, a lot of people say that they are milk's much better than the fresh milk.
Yep.
Scotty, there's a lovely old gag about Irish coffee, or indeed, actually, it might have been Irish whiskey. Only that drink contains the four major food groups: fat, sugar, alcohol, and coffee.
Well, it certainly does, and I don't think they'd be very good for you at all. But I must say, in the places I've been, including San Francisco on Fisherman's Wharf, where I've had a really good Irish coffee. They are a wonderful thing. They really are. I must admit, they were one of those things that I probably got a taste for as a kid, but because my mum always had an Irish coffee at Christmas. It was like a treat on Christmas morning, and of course I was allowed to have a sip of the, through the cream and have a little sip, and it just sort of one of those things, one of those tastes of Christmas, you know.
Warm the cockles of your heart, because it would have been cold where you grew up.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
So how do you make one, Scotty?
Well, we need about 40 ml of Irish whiskey. I'll argue the cost on that, you know, occasionally, and maybe make it a bit stronger and do a double top, which is, 60 ml.
Uh-huh.
80 ml of hot coffee. That's a percolated, gripulated type.
Yep.
1 teaspoon of brown sugar. Apparently brown sugar is very important in this as opposed to white sugar because it's thicker and it ends up with a thicker viscosity and allows you to float the milk on it a lot better.
Got a bit more body as a taste as well, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. 30 ml of fresh single cream. That's the stuff that's not been, thickened with corn flour or anything like that, real cream. And do nothing to that other than leave it out for 48 hours. And we heat the coffee and the whiskey and the sugar, but don't bring it to the boil. Just bring it up until it's nice and warm and that the sugar is dissolved. The most important thing is that the sugar is dissolved completely into that. I like to use a wine glass. That's another reason why you shouldn't boil it, because it could crack the glass.
Right.
Once the coffee is still, once you've poured it in there, leave a gap about, a centimetre to a centimetre and a half from the top. And once the coffee's still, pour the single cream over the back of a teaspoon, with the tip of the spoon slightly elevated until it forms a pure white, and rotate that around the top. And then gradually it will create a film on top of that and seal it, then you can pour the rest of the cream quite easily on top of that, and it produces like a Guinness-like head on the top, so you've got your black liquid underneath with this perfect head to the top of the glass on top.
Do you pour it on the spoon, Scotty, so it gets an even spread over the surface of the glass?
Yeah, that's right, so that it's, it thins out.
Yes, of course.
What you pour in,
yep.
as opposed to drizzling it straight in and breaking the surface tension. It thins it out over a wider surface area.
Well, that sounds like too easy, and that's an Irish coffee, but could you use brandy or something? Can you deviate from the Irishosity of the coffee?
Well, of course, all these places during the 80s, they certainly did that, didn't they? Do you have the Black Stump in Melbourne?
The Black Stump?
Yeah, Black Stump Steakhouse.
How do you mix a Black Stump?
It was a steakhouse.
I was thinking it was a drink and try to imagine what you put together to mix up a Black Stump.
Well, the Black Stump Steakhouse is where the type of places during the 80s where you would have a whole list of these things. Like you would have Roman coffees with Galliano, with brandy, and Jamaican coffees with rum, the answer is yes, there were all sorts of variations.
I think
they kind of were made with the frothy cream from the can.
Well, we're going straight out to the kitchen here at Goodabeen's HQ and seeing if you've got the ingredients. It might be just the thing for after the next hour. Thanks, Scotty. Dan Dinnan has span around the corridor into the studio. Dan joins us. Hello, Dan.
I'm a bit spun out, I have span about because I didn't know about the Irish coffee order. So,
all right,
let's put an order in without the coffee. It'd be great.
Okay, very good. Yeah. But you are a blues and roots musician,
that's it. Just to get me in the mood, yeah.
And one of renown too, listeners. This is Dan Dinnan, who's joined us in the studio to share his life and his work with us this evening. Thanks for doing so, Dan.
And Dan, seeing as you are a blues and roots musician, we won't serve you proper whiskey, we'll get something that's just been made out of some Kero and some old tea.
No, from a still.
I have to admit I'm slightly refined there.
Now, I said you're a player of renown because you've won a couple of Blues Player of the Year gongs.
Just one. Mm-hmm. I will win another one.
Okay, good. That was a couple of years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah,
2009. Melbourne Blues Association.
Yes, yeah, which sends you over to Memphis to compete. compete.
How did that go for you?
Oh, fantastic! Because I hadn't been in that part of the world, and so it was definitely a pilgrimage. You go over and compete in something called the International Blues Challenge, which is amazing.
What happens?
Well, they wake up in the morning.
Bum, bum, bum,
yeah.
Bum.
That's right. And you walk on down Beale Street. There's acts from all over the world. Most of them, actually, a lot of them do come from the States, because you have to be affiliated with a blues society somewhere in the world.
Oh,
the
you've got to be a card-carrying
Well, you have to go through this formal competition in your own hometown. Yeah. And in the States, there's you know, however many blues societies. So there's a lot of
So do people, like, get kicked out of it? You know, like their blues went a little bit soft, or they had 13 bars instead of 12 or something like that.
Hey, come on, I do a 15 bar.
Yeah. Or, you know, they played a jazz chord with too many augments, and they're just, you're out, never back in again.
Come on. I like the wake up in the morning thing, but no, look, the blues is a very diverse music, it's a big umbrella. But look, the competition's incredible. There's acts from all over the world.
And how did you go, Dan?
I walked down Beale Street.
What form does the competition?
So you didn't bring back gold for Australia?
No, I didn't. I have to say.
Dan, what sort of form does this competition take? How are you competing?
Heats and all that bizarre?
Yeah, well, your first sort of heat is in your... So the heat that I did was here in Melbourne.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So then basically when you get over there, you're already a sort of semi-finalist or something.
Okay.
And there's all these heats going... all up and down Beale Street. All the clubs are full of people playing. You perform to a panel of judges plus your audience, and you perform over a couple of nights, and then they basically tally up your score. And
are the judges peers?
Some of them are, but there's people from
music industry journalists,
DJs. Yeah.
How many songs, like, roughly, did you get to perform upon? Yeah.
I think it's like 20 minutes.
Wow.
A 20-minute set
each night.
Yeah. Yeah.
So 40 minutes in all to do your thing.
And in your venue, you have to win in your venue to go on. Yeah. So, Dan,
I was just wondering whether it's original compositions or whether...
Well, yeah, look, one of the categories, because it's very transparent, you know what you're getting judged on.
Right.
And one of the categories was sort of originality, which is a funny thing, because then there's also blues content. So it's kind of like they're looking for something that they recognise as blues music. But apparently they want to see original compositions,
Dan,
as well.
Just in case there's someone listening who doesn't know what it is, play us a bit of blues music.
Well, how about you just say I woke up in the morning, I did the slide thing again.
Would you share one of your songs with us, Dan?
Yeah, I will. I'd love to. But now I want to play something that's like a standard 12 bar, so people don't get confused. So I'm going to do a cover first.
Right. Okay. What's this one?
This is a Muddy Waters song. Hmm. So Muddy's one of the great forefathers of blues, one of the legends. So he's basically a dead African American, and this song's called Honeybee. Sail on, my little honeybee. Sail on. Oh, my little honeybee, sail on. I don't mind you sailing, but please don't you sail so long. Sail on, my little honeybee, sail on. Sail on, my little honeybee, sail on. Gonna keep on sailing till you lose your happy home. Yeah. I hear a lot of buzzing, and it sounds like my little honeybee. I hear a lot of buzzing, and it sounds like my little honeybee. She's been all around the world making honey, and she's a coming home to me.
Dan Dinnan in the studios here on the Could Have Been Champions Saturday Soiree. Muddy Waters tune. As you said, the blues is a very big house with a lot of doors.
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
Any particular style of blues you're drawn to? Delta, Chicago?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was, I suppose, Muddy started as a Delta musician, moved up to Chicago. So he's that sort of progenitor of that sound, which is where I started. But I went back to an older what I call pre-war blues. And I found that with that sort of style of stuff, you tap into more jazz and folk, and it's a lot more crossover going on when you go to the earlier stuff.
Do you remember when you first heard a Muddy Waters tune?
Yeah, look, I would have been a teenager. I found a harmonica, and I had no idea what blues was. I was a young man, a teenager, and you know, with not much to do, and so I stole this harmonica. It was a kid's harmonica, and I was at a kid's birthday party.
You stole
very,
a harmonica.
Yeah, I did.
That would have got a great start.
But then I felt really guilty and I gave it back, so I went and bought one. And luckily the guy at the shop sold me a blues harp. And I had no idea what blues was, but I knew I loved this instrument and I learnt my way around it. And then, you know, just synchronicity, some other wayward teens that I was friends with started playing me, you know, Muddy Waters.
Was Muddy Waters the first blues man you heard?
Yeah, Howlin' Wolf, Muddy Waters,
so
Little Walter.
Chicago sort of sound. Yeah. So what was the first Delta blues you heard?
Well, you probably would have been Robert Johnson because, you know, that's the one that most people know. And then you know, you start hearing the names, so you go out and buy the records. So Lead Belly and a lot of the Mississippi guys, Mississippi John Hurt.
So when you heard that Delta sound, that attracted you even more?
You know, it's funny. I spent a long time listening to Chicago blues, the electric sound, and then I went, I don't want to be a blues musician. You know, it's why would you be a blues musician and an Aussie? It doesn't make sense. I'm going to play in bands. So I did that for a long time, and then I don't know, it just kept calling me back. And everyone used to say when I tried writing songs that didn't sound blues, people would say, that sounds really bluesy.
How do you find the state of blues in Australia?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Is it?
I think it's brilliant. And I think that going to the States gave me a real insight, because I think that as with most things that Aussies do, and we absorb things like sponges. We don't have all the history. So if you go to the States, it's like, you know, they want to know, okay, so you're an Austin, Texas blues man. You've got to have an Austin, Texas blues sound. Or you came out of a particular town, you know, like someone said to me when I was over there, this American guy who lived in New Orleans said, oh, you're playing the Bentonia blues. And I went, yeah. And then I went and had to Google it. So I think we have a lot of freedom to sort of absorb things and redefine them. And I think the scene here is incredible.
That's
a lot
across
of
the board
musicians.
Too, isn't it? Yeah. Because the bluegrass family that sprung up in Melbourne in particular, same thing, just leeching all the influences and getting a sort of, not a homogenous sound, but certainly getting a broader appreciation.
Yeah, I don't think it is homogenous. I think there's there's so many people playing on the scene. There was just a benefit. I mean, talking about the blues competition that's happening over in Memphis right now, there was a benefit gig for the current band that won it, a band called Dream Boogie. And so that was kind of the cream of, you know, Melbourne blues bands. And everyone had a different sound going on.
Yeah, you know, as they should.
Play us another one.
All right, I'll play something that is something that I wrote. So a bit of a different vibe.
Time I find my feet, every time I make my peace,
every time I find my way, when I know just what to say, you turn my head around, you turn my head upside down, you turn my head this way, everything I know just falls away, just falls away.
Thanks, Dan. Dan Dinnan. What's that called?
Good question. Well, it's in progress.
Oh,
you
okay.
You can't buy that one yet. You have to come to a gig.
I thought that might be on your 2010 album, Back Home, which is through Black Market Music,
yeah,
I think.
Thanks for mentioning it. The Muddy Waters tune is with double bass and fiddle, a bit of layering on there. And that one, if lots of people visit blackmarketmusic.com, .au perhaps, and or iTunes, and buy copies of Back Home with Christmas just around the corner.
Yes, perfect stocking
filler. Then I promise I will reinvest that money and record the song that I just played. So it's on the list for the next record.
Black Market has been doing a good job for blues for quite a long time.
So John Durr is really the man who behind that, and he's Black Market Music really, and he worked a lot with me to make that record happen, and has given me a lot of mentoring over the years.
Collard Greens and Gravy's another act of theirs.
You know, Jimmy Hocking was with them for a while. Yeah. And
Nick Charles
has put stuff out on Black Market.
And so you obviously mix with all those kind of blues artists.
Yeah, well, it's wonderful. I think, you know, I talked about sort of avoiding being that blues musician identity for a while when I was younger, and I've loved. I moved down here from Sydney about 12 years ago, part of the attraction to move to Melbourne was the music scene. And I loved going into the blues scene because it really is a fraternity or a, people do sort of do gigs together, encourage each other and support each other.
And enough places to play, Dan?
Oh, yeah, you got to travel a little.
Yeah.
So I've got one at Cunningham's Hotel in Yarra Junction. On Saturday, Sunday afternoon.
Does Melbourne
next week,
do you think, have a little bit of blues scene than Sydney?
Oh, yeah, undoubtedly.
Dan,
yeah.
I'm interested you say about the scene that people do play together and they're collaborative, which is a feature of the jazz scene.
Young
musicians are welcomed in and people share ideas. But other genres of pop music don't have that sort of community of practice
and
sharing ideas.
Yeah. It's funny because we're talking about, you know, the blues competition. I think that's seen more as a gateway to new experiences and perhaps a higher profile. But I think there's less competitiveness in this scene than I found in the band scene.
People happy to share ideas.
You're right. There is that history in both jazz and blues music to play on each other's records and with each other's bands.
A community of practice. It sounds to me like you're playing with your guitar a little bit detuned, yeah?
What have you got it in? Yeah. For the guitar geeks, It's in an open tuning. It's based around an open G tuning, but I've got the guitar tuned down a half step. So it's an open F sharp 7.
So that's
a five string
so
chord.
It's like the Keith Richards G tuning, but with one difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the guitar is a small body. It's a small body Gibson. Yeah, what vintage is it?
Oh, this is a sort of mid 60s. Is it? Gibson. This is my new friend. We've only known each other for a few months now, and my other beautiful acoustic that I work with is an Aussie guitar. It's a Maton, but it's a 1973 Maton.
Full size.
Yeah. So it's a Dreadnought body.
Do you have other guitars as well?
Not enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a very, very understanding wife who knows that there will be more guitars coming out. But yeah, look,
there'll be more babies coming along for you.
Yeah, then. We've got enough of those. But they're all different. They all have different sounds, and I think that it's been said. I'll say it again. There's different songs in them. So you get a different song out of a steel body resonator.
Sing us a different one.
All right. Yeah, I'll sing another one of mine that I promise I'll record on the next album when people buy.
We'll hold you to that.
Back home. All right. This one's called Change. Change is gonna take your soul. Change is gonna take your soul. That change is gonna come. You're gonna be undone. Change is gonna move you on.
Thanks, Dan. And you're currently working on a project that will see you putting the guitar down and just grabbing the mic with one hand and wailing into it with your voice and the heart with the other.
That's right.
Tell us about that.
How did you know that?
I just know.
Wow, it's like you've known me my whole blues life.
Well, I have.
That's not a project. That just happens sometimes.
Okay.
As a spontaneous end or beginning to gigs, yeah. Yeah. Ah, are you talking about the other band I'm with?
Yes.
Ah, I'm with you now. You're talking about Blues Deluxe?
Correct.
Yeah, we got there. You know me better than I know myself. look, that's been really good. It started off as... when I came back to blues, it, 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 I was a bit of a hard head about it. I wanted to be in my definition of what authentic was. I wanted to play acoustic based stuff with that tapped into an old pre-war blues vein,
mm-hmm.
and sort of somehow connect that with my own songwriting. And I didn't want to be in the loud electric blues band thing. But, you know, you make friends and you respect what they do. And someone called me up and said, hey, look, we've got this band. You know, it's kind of, it's a bit of a jam and yada yada. And you don't have to rehearse. It'll just be fun. And I went, yeah, all right. So we had this regular gig down at Frankston for a while.
Nice.
Did you play electric? Or?
Yeah, well, I got out the old, you know, Gibson electric guitar and did a bit of that, but it's evolved and the players have sort of lots of people came through that band and now the lineup has sort of steadied and we've got some great guys from the scene. There's a guy called Pete Bielke on bass. Pete, speaking of people that do lots of different projects, Pete plays with everyone.
Yep.
And if people out there listening are familiar with the scene, they would know the late, great Dutch Tilders.
Yes.
Yeah, Pete did a lot of work with Dutch, as did the lead guitarist in the band, Greg Dodd, who also plays with the Andrea Marr band.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy called Pete Hodges on drums and Lyndon Cornwell playing guitar and sort of bring it all together. So because there's so many guitars, I really put my guitar down and I'm just being the front man and standing there playing harmonica and singing, and it's been really good, yeah. Yeah. Mm. So the bands are sort of getting to that point where we're going, hey, we're actually a band now and we're enjoying what we're doing, and it's slowly progressing, yeah.
Well, you can keep abreast of Dan's movements by going to Dan Dinnen, that's spelled DINNEN.com, and follow the progress of Dan's music, and you can buy his material there and look forward to his next release. Thanks so much for coming in, Dan.
Pleasure.
Nice to meet you, Dan.
Yeah. Sunday week is the...
In Yarra Junction, Cunningham's Hotel, and it's on the Warburton Highway, and it's an afternoon gig, 2 till 4, with a trio, so double bass and an electric guitar player. And
and around the country, you're looking forward to go around the country?
Well,
soon?
I did mention those babies, and they're real. And,
oh, okay, right.
Some young kids. So, look, little trips into Victoria, nothing major planned, because... I'm striking that balance right now between home and music. Yeah.
Well, thanks for tearing yourself away from the changes.
Well, that's
okay. Yeah. Could have been champion Saturday soiree. Great to have you on board. Hello and welcome back to the Could Have Been Champion Saturday soiree. This is the last hour of our broadcast this evening, but you can check us out through the week on the podcast if you like. Just go to abc.net.au/couldhavebeens. You'll find links to the podcast. You might like to visit that address tonight and send us an electric mail, as a couple of our listeners have. And it's nice to know that Tom is listening in Washington, the USA.
Hello, Tom.
Good to have you on board, Tom.
Yeah, we've also had an email from Mike, who's down there in Tassie.
Calling you Mike.
And Mike was particularly taken with your description of the donut van at the Royal Adelaide show, Greg.
Yes,
and he's written a little song for you.
Yes.
It goes like this.
Sing it for us.
If you come to South Australia, there is something you should know. You can watch the donuts being made down there at the Adelaide show. They are hot, they're fresh, they're tasty, and they're cooking all the while. They're the pride of South Australia. They're the mighty nuts of dough.
He's good.
Mike in Tassie, thank you for that. That was a ripper.
Yeah. I feel very... sad to report that I had about half a dozen great emails collected over the past fortnight, printed off, and I'm sorry that they haven't made it into my bag, and I've got some stuff to have to share with you next time.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's okay.
Steve has written into us also since we've been on air tonight.
Steve.
Good to hear from you, Steve. Apropos of going on rides at the show, and as happened to Ian on the teacups, and getting a bit more than you bargained for, not quite the same, but he went up to Port Douglas on a holiday, and he was up there with his friend and their family, and his friend and his daughter had gone on this thing where you got to go for a ride on a jet ski, you know, and you pay and you get to drive around, and they were saying how much fun it was and how they got the ski up to 80. Oh. So he had to try it out. So he went out with his son hanging on out the back, and he got it up to 50, then up to 60, and he could hear his son shouting, go, 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 and he finally got over 70. Yeah. After they got in, he found out that his son had been yelling, no, no, no. Anyway, at the end of the ride, the jet ski man said, "Oh, yeah, I had a go," and Steve said, "Oh, it was great," but unfortunately, unlike his friend who and his daughter who bragged about getting up to 80, I only got it up to 70. Now, Steve doesn't know whether he said this to make him feel better, but he said, "Yeah, mate, but his one was in KPH, yours was in MPH."
Okay, well.
Thank you, Steve.
Also, thank you to John. He let us know that we were speaking about the ghost train with a listener early on in the program. He said, "My son found a 78 recording from the ghost train at Sydney's Luna Park at a local tip shop." Yeah. He's been in touch with Luna Park and he'd been told that it's only one of two that remain to this day.
Wow, so what how about a great
that? That's
find.
That's a great archival find.
There are a couple of little emails here. Hmm. One was from Malcolm.
Hello, Malcolm.
Malcolm Flanagan.
"Please don't use my last name," it says there.
He wrote, "If you haven't done it already," and it turns out we have, Mal, "how about a cricket song for Ishant Sharma to Instant Karma? Ishant Sharma's going to get you." Well, Malcolm, great minds think alike, because the idea did come up one or two summers back, and we did have a little poke at that ditty. And it's not surprising that you've thought of the same thing, and thanks. And another email from Richard Evans. Richard Evans always sending a ditty.
He's fun, Richard. I like Richard.
This was back at yacht race time. Mm. Richard wrote, "There's a yacht race today, and it's down Hobart way, and the favourite is Wild Oats 11. She's the pride of the fleet, and she's likely to beat Hugo Boss, Living Doll, and Ichiban." Ichiban, however you like to spell it. Nice work, Richard, and come football season, we'll be hearing more of Richard's
disease. Yeah. Speaking of Ishant Sharma, do you feel that Big Bash 2020 cricket has changed the face of cricket? Do you feel that, you know, I heard someone on Grandstand say today, "Oh, coming up tomorrow is the first one-day international between Australia and India." And I thought, well, what were those other two?
Yeah.
So if they weren't one day international, what were they? Mm. Do you feel he's losing track a little bit with all this different cricket?
No. Obviously, they're called 2020s, naturally. But the people have voted 60-something thousand to see that 2020.
Yeah, I saw that. Very popular.
It's fun, isn't it?
If the people have voted, and you know,
if less people go to this 50-50 one tomorrow, will people be saying 50 over cricket, where to now?
Well,
they already have.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah.
Basically, the question is asked. It is on the way. It is marginalised. It's on the way out. And they've had the two 2020s. They've worked well. And look, if people are voting with their feet, you can't argue too much with them. We can't say, not that you want to mount a campaign to have the 50-50 stay. That's a 50-over game.
Well, yeah, with its rich traditions.
You can only,
all the heritage and the history of 50-over cricket.
You can only hope, Richo, and there's a small chance of this, that the demise of the 50-50 game, or I'll call it 50-overs, will somehow help preserve the sanctity of the test game. Because by taking out the 50-over game, you get these two very clear differences. And there is this move to say, well, one day cricket's dying, but long live test cricket.
Well, it sounds like convincing, but there's a bit of whistling in the dark about it too.
Okay, we shall see.
Did you see the auction was on? Tell. The auction was on today for the Indian Big
Bash. I heard
the
figures.
Bash.
Walshy told us.
Oh yes, do you remember?
Yes, one Indian player went for $2 million.
Who was that?
His name wasn't familiar to me. One went for 1.4. Might have been Jadeja. Or Deja Vuja.
And any Australian players come out of retirement to go for several million?
Brendan McCullum went for 900 and something thousand. Mitch Johnson went for 300 and something thousand. And Hodge went for 450 odd. Yeah. They're the ones that stick in my mind from Peter Walsh.
Haydos and Gilly and all of them, are they still in?
No report, Your Honour.
Oh, okay. So
Peter Walsh didn't share it with us on ABC Radio Grandstand. And if you were Cove, That would be from her album. Because he has a bit of a way of saying album.
He's just funny that way. Are you funny that way, Ian Cohen?
Oh, I probably am, Billy. Hello again. And Sylvie Palladino, of course, has sung the national anthem at the AFL Grand Final.
Correct. She bobs up every year on the Carols by Candlelight, too.
I think you'll find that's the Carol by Candlelight.
Oh, okay. Beg your pardon.
The Carol by the Candlelight, as Kamala calls it. Yeah.
And a fabulous artist and a lovely person, too.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And quite often people say it's unlikely to hear various artists. You know, no one expected to hear the Marshall Tucker Band the other week. There'd be equally people say, I never expected to hear Sylvie Palladino on the Could Have Been. So that just goes to show what a broad church it is, musically.
It is. Or what a wacko bunch we are.
Oh, I think it just shows. I told you the best words in the English language start with E.
Yes.
Eclectic.
Thank you.
I thought you were going to say esoteric. No. This is the part of the program where we look back on the week that was and share the highlights thereof. Ian, you're infirmed tonight.
Yes.
But you've got out of your sick bed to share yours with us. Yeah. Would you do so now?
Yes, I would. And first, I will just give you one.
Yeah. Yes.
Because quite often I have a do 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 do.
Oh, you do that way.
Well, apart from being still a bit unsteady on my feet after the incident in the tea cup and the saucer.
Yes.
I know it's tickled Richo's fancy tonight, hasn't it?
It has. He loves it. He's gone giggly.
In fact, if we ever were caught again as a group, I think the album cover will have each of us sitting in our own individual tea cup.
That'd be very 60s.
Each having appropriate responses to the experience.
make a great photo, that. Whilst I'm a little bit unsteady on my feet, I also had to go and visit someone in a hospital during the week.
Yes.
Now, I think you all know this, and listeners have probably picked up over the course of the program, that I don't live in a major metropolitan capital city. I live in a sleepy seaside hamlet.
Yes.
So what are the odds that when you go to visit someone in a hospital in a major capital city, that the person in the next bed will come from the same sleepy seaside hamlet?
Oh, it's mandatory.
Is it? I mean, because I've been talking to the person who was hospitalised and, you know, just bringing them up to date on some of the things that were happening back in the sleepy seaside hamlet.
Mm-hmm.
And when later it was revealed the person in the next bed was also from there, then you have to stop and think, gee, I hope I wasn't talking too loudly about such and such.
Well, the curtains were drawn, were they?
Oh, yeah.
You didn't see this person through the curtains.
No, the old curtains drawn around are a trap in a hospital, aren't they? So there you go.
And were they known to you, Ian?
No. So, and which is unusual when you live in a small
village. I thought you knew them all.
No. So it was do-do-do-do.
Mm.
Sorry about that. Anyway, look, apropos of that, can I want to raise something with you because in the last week or so, the youth radio, the young person's radio arm of the ABC, has had a thing with 100 songs in it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the most popular thing about songs in the world, we're told.
Well, I think they had 198,000 entries or something.
Yeah, it's more popular than anything that ever has been or ever will be.
Can they get those people to run the Logies?
Yeah.
apparently, you could see this competition from the moon.
Well, if you want to get in fact, the Alan Border Medal should be done with the same people voting because, fair dinkum, that is a huge sample, is it not, Richo?
Enormous.
Yeah,
you could draw all sorts of conclusions from it. You don't need to hold the next election.
No, you don't. Exactly right. In fact. The Youth Radio Network will actually conduct the next federal election.
They will. They'll do the next referendum. They'll decide on Australia becoming a republic. Yeah. You can just forget everything else.
Right. So there you go. That is the new vote line. Just go to... Well, I've learned a little bit about this because a younger member of the household is a listener to it and right into it, you know, and listens to these artists and plays them on albums made up of their own compilation of artists. And it was revealed to me.
Mm.
Now, Richo, you move in the halls of academia.
Oh, sometimes.
Well,
I keep a low profile.
Well, it might be worth it. Look, I discovered through a younger member of the household that a chappie has done his
PhD or his master's, something like that.
He's done research.
Well, I think he's done it at a very high level into the whole phenomena of the top 100.
Yeah.
Well, is that right?
And as it should be, as we've already been acknowledging how important it is.
Yes. Well, amid the research from this year, because he's done it, perhaps looking over the whole history of the 100, and, you know, done breakdowns and analysis and all that sort of stuff. He's got plenty of data to go through this year. A question for you. This is my magic.
Okay. Yeah.
His research reveals that of the 100 songs that made it the top 100 this year,
yeah,
which instrument did not appear in any one of the 100 songs?
Accordion?
No.
It's banjo.
Oh, that might be right, but I know the one I'm looking for is not the banjo.
Orchestral instrument?
Mouth trumpet.
I think it's on 17 of them.
Ian, can I ask you multiple choice?
Yeah.
Woodwind?
No.
Percussive?
Yes.
Percussive.
Percussive. Vibraslap? No.
Oh, drums, obviously. They were all done with drum machines.
No, you're in the right area.
Oh. Ooh.
Congas?
Oh, it starts with C.
We're going to go bongos, isn't it?
Cymbals.
No.
Is it a compound word?
Oh, gee, you're very clever. Well, it is, yeah.
Is it cowbell?
Yes.
Oh. You're joking.
The cowbell does not appear in the top 100. Now,
how do they know?
Yeah.
Well, this bloke has done the research, Richard.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you're quite right. There might be other instruments that don't appear as well, but hasn't the cowbell had a long and rich and celebrated, you know, involvement in popular music?
And how do they know that one of these... Oh, there we go.
There we go.
They only trotted out for Honky Tonk Women and Hitchcock Railway.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's 100 songs there. You assume for most of them anyway, there was a drummer sitting up behind his drum kit. How do you know one of those drummers didn't have a cowbell in his kit and he didn't hit it at least once?
You're asking too many questions.
And as you said, we have this is the greatest...
We have to trust these people.
We trust these people. Yeah, exactly.
If they said it, it's good enough for me.
Yeah. So, Champy?
Yes.
I played your latest album in the car, and I think the thing that lets it down is the lack of a cowbell somewhere there.
But that shouldn't let it down. Its lack of cowbell should promote it into the top 100.
Oh, that's a very good point. Yeah, right. I was just trying to bring it back, because I think it's sad in... Yeah.
Can you just pull up Hitchcock Railway for their bass?
Yeah, I can do that.
Because I think... Well, you tell me the three top pop hits of the last 50 years that did flaunt cowbell.
This is a nuanced question. You're asking for three songs that flaunted the cowbell, or are you looking for the three standout uses of the cowbell?
I think they're one and the same.
Either one. I don't know the difference. Like Cove.
Honky Tonk Women.
Yeah.
One.
Tonky Honk Women.
Two.
And Women Who Honky Tonk.
Three.
And Hitchcock. Hitchcock's
this,
the one.
This one here.
Here's Hitchcock.
Let's see if...
This is live, so it might not have...
Oh, it's a live track. Oh, dear.
Come on, cowbell.
Come on.
Oh, well, live.
No, I don't think we're going to get...
We're just getting the big Phil Collins drum sound there. Oh. Another one where the cowbell really comes to the fore, although you couldn't really call it a hit, but I know all of you. It Fleetwood Mac's "Oh Well" has that signature bit of cowbell.
Yeah, exactly right. Anyway, anyone else who wants to help compile this, send the list to the Champy. You're the list man.
Yeah. It's so funny that you should mention that because my cat track tonight's about cowbell Boscova.
Oh, fantastic! Well, there you go. What a lovely little segue that'll be.
Don't Fear the Reaper. Blue Oyster Cults.
All right, I'll get you some more research too. It's quite fascinating.
Mm.
Do you know what the average, now, of the 100 songs,
what
was the average number of artists, you know?
Per band?
Per band, or per song.
Five?
I know, we're doing, it's much more accurate than that. We're doing.
Oh, we're getting down to decimal points here.
We are. Mm.
4.7.
Oh, 3 point something.
Yeah, 3 point something.
There we go, because there'll be some solos. 3 point, I'll go low. 3.2.
It's 3.11.
There we go.
Really? Mm. So 3.11.
Yeah, 3.11. So Must be a very skinny artist, that one. So there you go. So there's lots more of that to come. I've got my younger member of the household working on more stuff for us for coming weeks. It's quite fascinating to just look at the popular music world today.
Boss, that is perfect way for a young person to earn their pocket money.
Yeah, I suppose it is.
It makes me feel quite relaxed. We don't have to feel anxious about the world being run anymore. We can just let the top 100 decide everything.
Champion, I think next year we're going to get a lot of people to put in votes for you.
Well, Covey, and what network are we referring to? Not Dig, but the other one.
Triple J.
Triple J.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, they must have a lot of listeners then.
Absolutely.
And it's probably a good point that we don't often do this conjunct magic moments with the CAC track. But, Cove, would you like to hear the CAC track?
Okay, and then I'll there'll be lights out here, I think.
All righty. Well,
in the infirmary.
And now we get back into magic moments.
All right.
Gregory. Or Jeff, whatever you like.
I'm ready to go.
Way you go. Fire up.
Off you go, Jeff.
You've probably heard the phrase, the cashless society, that we're headed towards it.
These days.
I think we've reached it. I think we're there.
Yes, I'm sure you're right.
There's often talk about, discounts for cash or, there's a cash economy or, don't worry about that. Get it in cash if you can. All those kinds of sayings around cash.
I've heard people in a shop say, do you take cash?
That's the problem I struck in. I was in a place that would not take cash.
Wow. And not in an airplane because they won't take cash in a plane no more.
This was as normal as you can be. It was a convenience store, but it was one that was attached to a place where you can also fill your car with petrol. I was getting some milk, wasn't I? That's a convenience store. It's meant to be convenient. So I just was going in there to get a bottle of milk because we'd run out. And, of course, this convenience store also had a automatic teller machine where you could get money.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a good idea. I'll get some money and then I'll get the milk. I didn't buy petrol or anything, so I just parked, went in, selected my milk, produced my money, and the person behind the counter didn't say these exact words, but words of effect, also, no, we don't take money. What denomination bill do you think that they were unprepared to accept?
10.
No, it was high. I was a 50. But for a big thing of milk, it was $6 odd. Yeah. Oh, you haven't got anything smaller? No. Oh, look, we can't break a 50 for a bottle of milk.
What day of the week was this, Jeff?
It was a Saturday.
This sounds like the bloke who stomps on kiddies' feet at the go-karts.
The shop was full of people buying stuff. Oh, we don't carry enough. That was the story, wasn't it?
Didn't the boss go down to the bank on Friday and get some change for the weekend?
They don't hold enough cash, was the story, to be able to break a $50 note purchase.
Why don't they just say that Till is a bit embarrassed at the moment for change?
Which obviously wasn't, because... Yeah, I don't like doing this, but I made a bit of a
scene about it.
I said you're kidding, aren't you? It's not like I'm giving you $100 note. This is a $50 note. It's a set there. You've got people coming in and out here, left, right, and centre. I'm not going to demand that you show it to me, but I bet your till is full of money. Of course, it was, and eventually they rolled over and let me buy my bottle of milk and gave me $40-odd change, but it was a real battle.
He was having a bad day.
No, it was clearly policy of the shop.
I've done plenty of retail in my life, and if that was a situation I couldn't make the change out of the till, then you go to your bag and see if you can do it there and put a little chit in.
It wasn't that they couldn't make change.
What's his person's name?
It wasn't that they couldn't do it. It was that their policy is to not take cash.
Well, that is
basically.
I was
both appalled but highly amused. It was a laughable situation where you come to a shop. No, we don't. We don't take cash.
Very distressed for you.
And unbelievable. Yeah, obviously they do carry enough to be able to break a $50 note. But the point is they don't want to. They're trying to discourage you.
Will you be going back there?
I don't think so.
It's a tragic.
I don't think I'm going to ruin this global chain by my non-patronage, but still.
Do you know, this is on the back of yours, sort of a magic, sort of not, but just an observation. I went into, I was down there in Victoria, and I hadn't been in the Melbourne CBD for quite some time, and I had like about 2 hours to kill. And I stumbled into the NGV and saw a fabulous exhibition of old skateboard paraphernalia and sat down and watched skateboard videos for most of the afternoon. But while I was wandering around the town, the preponderance of these little hole-in-the-wall money exchange things, there was like about six of them within four city blocks.
Where if you can change your Swedish krona into some other currency.
Yeah.
Not ATMs.
No, not ATM machines.
Cambios, foreign exchange booths.
Never even seen one.
Oh, Champy Fedicum, there was about six within four city blocks.
Yeah, and they'd take cash.
And they were all, people were lined up at them.
Wow.
So down there in Melbourne, they're doing a wonderful tourist trade.
Good for the international tourists.
Yeah, so you can't buy a bottle of milk, but you can, you know, change your Turkish pounds into pesos without any trouble at all.
Very interesting. How bizarre. Well, just hope you have a better, more cheerful week.
No, it's the cashless society. Mm. Don't worry. I won't carry money anymore. Didn't I won't bother with it.
Didn't they put it on your slate? Yeah. You say, I just put it on me.
Yeah.
I'll fix you up during the week.
Yeah.
And what do you got for us, Champy?
Cashless.
The magic moment was here on the Could Have Been Champion Saturday soiree in Galahaye.
Two things. And while I remember what the other one was,
It'll come to you.
I just want to share with you today's events at the athletics track.
Ah, you're still doing that?
Well, yes.
And I thought your ankle was dodgy.
Oh, that's okay.
Oh, good.
Now, I'm just going to take you through the scoring system to get you through to the finals.
Right.
We compete in the 40 plus division of the caper.
Yeah.
And each of the last 2 years, ourselves and another club which will remain nameless but has been known to be called Collingwood, have gone through to the finals.
Right.
And then we've been 1 and 2 in the state.
Right.
Well, this year a third club has come up to challenge the competition. So there were three. We've come down to the last round today, and there were three teams virtually locked on the same points, only two of which can go through.
Right.
Now, the other two sides, which shall remain nameless, one of them was Collingwood, and the other mob were on 64 points, and our club was on 62. We had to get all hands on deck today and try, and you get 8 points for a win, 6 for second and 5 for third. It's not good enough to come second today. We had to have an 8, otherwise we're not going to get the extra 2 points against the other clubs, one of which was Collingwood. So,
it was crucial then.
It was crucial. So the points, and what's more, they'd set up a TV monitor to monitor the score during the day, the progress scores. And as the afternoon wore on, at one point, we were reported to be 100 points up, but these points changed quickly, I must say. And then at the next glance, we were 17 points down. Uh-huh. So if you walked around to the other side of the ground and looked at the TV monitor. So when it came to later in the afternoon, it was going to go down to the wire. It was a knife edge all day. And when I left, we were apparently 24 points up. In scores of about 500 or 600, in the hundreds. So tiny amounts.
That's a 15th.
It is a 15th. So I asked a friend to please, I had to come to the Cuddabeans on the radio, to please send through the result on the way. And I got the call on the way, and the report is, and it's that we were 5 points behind the club that we had to beat to get into the go through.
So 5 points out of 500 plus.
Or 600. Oh. 5 points out of 500 or 600.
Surely they'd call for a replay, they a are recount. Going,
there is a recount, and I believe we get the results on Monday or Tuesday.
Oh, that's a sleepless weekend for
even you. If there is a recount, it goes the other way. At that little 5 points out of 500. Oh.
It's so small.
Yeah.
And that's come down over a whole season.
Yeah.
It's come down to a fraction of a percent. If we go through on a recount, the side we beat goes through and Collingwood misses out because they came third today. So it's gone down to the very wire.
Well, this just goes to show you one thing. In these kinds of inter-club events, whether it's athletics, surf carnivals, inter-club swimming and whatever. Doesn't matter if you don't win. You've got to have a runner in every event because even the little points count.
Every little point counts.
Every little point counts. Never leave your lane empty at a carnival.
Well, so the day began with sprint hurdles, and we had three, and Conrad had three, and the other mob had two, and then it moved on to long jump, and then there were the hundreds, and then there were the 4x1s, and in the 4x1s it was important to get up, and that the 4x1 A-team managed to get up on Box Hill, and then it came down to the 400s, and the I think there was a steeple at the end of the... But to come down to 5 points, we shall see what the recount says, but that is a bizarre margin. Anyway, I'll think of the other one in a minute.
Well, it's a statistical tie, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well,
not really, but you can keep saying it.
Well, we won't go through next week, but we have had a good run.
But we've got a good dozen minutes for you to share some of your material, Champy. I can put my records away now.
Well, can I just share this little magic? And that was that I was sternly requested by the 9-year-old offspring Shay Nu to be taken over the summer holidays to the fun park by the sea, the permanent one with the big laughing mouth. The moon park, the one that says Luna. So we went along, took her girlfriend, and the tickets, do you know what happens when you walk into the big fun park with the gaping mouth?
You have to go to a booth and children have to stand up against a measuring stick.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And you buy your tickets for all the rides.
Did you? What you did? Have you done that recently?
A year ago.
Well, they have to be the right height. They have to be above a certain height.
Mm.
But yes, because free to walk in.
Yeah, you that's just, right. You walk in the mouth. There's no.
You can wander around to your heart's content. Entry, it won't cost you a zack.
Entry is free and at no cost.
So, you get the...
All free.
Pay one happy price, and I was informed there were 17 rides, one of which wasn't working. So, we... But if you can stay all day, you can get on 16 rides, if you can stay.
That's a lot of rides.
It's a lot of rides. So, we start down the bottom end, and one of them is the... It's like a sort of train carriage or... like a train carriage, and it's on an arm, and that arm goes...
Sort of like a pendulum.
It's pendulous.
Yeah, so it goes right over the top. It swings this way and this way, and then it nearly goes over the top, and then eventually...
It's a big swing.
All right.
But goes all the way all over.
Right. Mm. On a big scale. Well, I love that one. And then there's the one where you... they're hard to describe, but... Mm. Yes, they started on the teacup one. Yes.
Oh, they had the teacups.
Well, that sort of idea.
They must tell Ian about it. He can go along there.
So by then, okay. So then the decision was, and there's queues. It was summer holidays.
Yeah.
So there are queues. So they decided not the scenic railway, but either the Mad Mouse or the Mighty Mouse. What's it called?
Mad
Mouse at the show, but I don't know about the gaping.
Yeah, the
jaws.
The gaping jaws. Always been known as. I think actually at Luna Park, the Mad Mouse stands where the Big Dipper once was.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's right.
So is there a Mighty Mouse, or is that like at the Adelaide
He's a cartoon character, but I can't speak for Adelaide.
Okay, right. So they've gone on Mad Mouse, and that queue took maybe nearly half an hour. So there's a lot of waiting for parents in the shade where possible. So they've gone on this Mad Mouse, so that's all fun. They love that. So they're loving everything. So they go, well, look, queue, and the longest queue was at the Scenic Railway.
Yeah.
Easily. So they've gone, well, queue or not, we've got to go on the Scenic Railway after that. So the ghost train would have to wait. So by the time they've queued, the queue for the Scenic Railway took over an hour, but they weren't to be daunted.
Normally children aren't patient, but this time?
They can actually be very patient when there's, something they want and there's two of them and blah, blah, blah. So they stuck it out and they toughed it out and they went on it. And they loved it. And whilst they were in the queue, I said to them, well, if you're going to stay in this queue, this is after half an hour, this is your last ride because we're running out of time. We've been here for hours already. So they said, no, and they went on the scenic railway and it got the whole buzz that they wanted, and there's plenty of plunges in the old scenic
railway.
You do go around twice, and the first time plunges, and second time it's not without its plunges either. It's a different rail. It's not the same track twice, of course. No. Two loops of course. And a fun time was had by all. And the first time I've been there for 25, 30 years.
And you loved it?
Oh, there's a lot of waiting for parents.
Has it still got the puppet of the king up there in the, above the Giggle Palace just sitting there going,
You'd better play your guitar. We're running out of time.
It's old King Cole, I think, isn't
it? No, I don't know, Jeff.
And puppet, he just loves.
Used to be.
Yeah, he never stops.
What? There's 13 or 12 rides we didn't get on.
But you've got to go back.
They were happy. They were happy. It was a good investment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for you. Yeah,
this is a song we cooked up for Tamworth, and now we'll cook it up here. And we're coming up to Saturday Night Country after the news.
Yes.
Way up the Inkajinky by the Billabinky River in the territory known as Bulabangaloo. Up the Jinky Jinky River lived an interesting fella, William the Wonder Boy of Bulabangaloo. By day he would wander round the hills of Inkadonga, and he'd paint all the scenery round Bulabangaloo. And his mother would say, where you been all day? And he'd say, up to Inkadonga, down to Binkadoo. Way up the Inkajinky by the Billabinky River between Inkadonga and Bulabangaloo. Past Oodnapalabi and Bulabillababi lived William the Wonder Boy of Winkadinkydoo. One day out a walking from a Wonkaroo to Willoughby, he came upon a wombat, now Dinkum Jiji Joo. A baby wombat who lost his family, he cried and asked young William what to do. So William the Wonder Boy scooped the baby wombat up and knocked on the door of every wombat hole, till finally found the wombat family down a dark hollow up the Ninkumbidgee Road. Way up the Inkajinky by the Billabinky River between Inkadonka and Bulabangaloo. Past Oodnapalabi and Bulabillagabi lived William the Wonder Boy of Bulabangaloo. So it came to pass that William the Wonder Boy and the baby wombat became close pals, and they sat together by the Jinkumbidgee River and told each other tall tales for hours and hours. Way up the Inkajinky by the Billabinky River between Inkadonka and Bulabangaloo. Past Oodnapalabi and Bulabillagabi lived William the Wonder Boy of Bulabangaloo.
Super, I bet that went down a treat at Tamworth.
It went all right.
Nice, lovely. Look forward to being recorded.
Yes. Yes, well, now that this new record is out, which we should have called Eclectic.
No, that's for I was thinking this year. It had Emergence. So what do you follow that up with? Actually, I hadn't thought Eclectic's not about it. The one after Emergence has got to have some kind of name that complements it, you know what I mean? Or it's, or mirrors it, or is evoked by, I don't know how you do it. Well, emergence.
That's a funny moment, because Cove mentioned on the radio, on the phone tonight, that he likes the word eclectic, and I'd only been thinking yesterday that eclectic would have been a reasonable name for this record, because I'd rather like
it.
It
is eclectic, there's no doubt about that.
Yes.
Do you have another song to share prior to the news, Gregory?
Well, why don't we just sort of... I tell you what, here's another mini magic. Each year at Tamworth, it seems that Colin Buchanan goes and plays at the old folks' home as a something for the community.
That's
good. And so he suggested that we, as a rehearsal, go to the old folks' home. So Peter Dennehy and Bucko and myself and Gary Carruthers, all four of us went and did a show at the old folks' home.
God bless.
There was about 20 people maybe in the room. Some of them were in wheelchairs, and some of them were quite senior, others very alert, and it was a most enjoyable experience. And one of the things we did do, which will always make nearly anyone teary, of course, was this, of course.
Champions. Saturday soiree, great to have your company. Look forward to your company next week. Thanks to Young Andy on production. Good night, Jeff.
Good night to you, Billy, and thanks for listening.
Good night, Greg.
Good night to you too.
Good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are. Get better soon, Ian Cover.